This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. Someone's got it in for me. They're planting stories in the press. Whoever it is, I wish they'd cut it out quick. But when they will, I can only guess. They say I shot a man named Gray and took his wife to Italy. She inherited a million bucks, and when she died it came to me. I can't help it if I'm lucky. Yeah, people see me all the time, they just can't remember how to act. Their minds are full with big ideas, images and distorted facts.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is that time of the week, ladies and gentlemen, for the P2 Podcast. Recorded live at Trinidad World Recording, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Thank you for joining us out there, folks, for this edition of the P2 Podcast. With me, oh, almost as always, my good friend, cohort, fellow singer-songwriter, a man who is a seer of sights, a historical... God, what are you? What are you, Kurt South?
Just a genius.
A genius. A guy who...
A direction.
Is able to pull things from the past and make them relevant to the future. As we talk all things Texas music, rock and roll, and... As we say, like to say, that we're that lighthouse in the fog out there.
We are.
In chaotic music and economic times, people are saying, you know, I'm cruising through iTunes, MySpace. It's just chaotic. What direction do I go? Where do
Follow
I turn?
Follow the beacon. Follow the beacon.
Kurt South is here to help us in that direction. Well, it's a special day, folks, because we have a special guest with us today. This is the first time we've had three people in here on the podcast. With me is a Texas music legend, a good friend of mine for years and years. He's been everywhere, man. The drummer. How many years?
15.
15 years, the drummer for Jack Ingram's beat-up Ford band. And has played quite a few Pritchett gigs in his time. Drummer extraordinaire, Pete Coatney is here.
Thank you, Phil. It's nice to join you, sir.
In the studio audience.
Kurt, thank you.
Pete Coatney is here.
Well, glad to be here.
We're going to talk a little bit today about how me and Pete got to know each other. Pete is full of great stories. Oh, my God. I mean, you know, touring the whole country with Ingram, touring the greater Fort Worth Metroplex with Phil Pritchett and the full band.
Absolutely.
Pete and I got to know. I became aware of Pete. Now, the first time I ever saw Jack was playing at my college in Georgetown, Southwestern University.
Right.
Came to play a Rawhide party. I think that was before you were there. Reed Easterwood, who played on Suburban Legends. We talked about my record Suburban Legends a couple of podcasts ago. Reed Easterwood was playing with Ingram then.
Yep.
And another drummer. This has been like 92 or something. Okay. Before your time, what time did you come on with Jack?
94, February 1st, 1994.
Wow, a day that will live in infamy.
That's right. It was an 8-airs gig. Another infamous place.
Infamous place that we've all played a time or two. So Pete was came on with Jack Ingram, and I was living in Austin around that Suburban Legends time. It was maybe about 98, 99. You know, I'd gotten to know Jack a little bit. We played a lot of shows with him. And I didn't know you that well. I mean, I think we'd met. And I was surprised when Jack one time said, hey, you ought to call Pete, because I was looking for a drummer. And The first time I think we talked on the phone, I remember being in my kitchen in Austin.
Right.
Talking to Pete Coatney about playing some shows. You know, were you married and having kids then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got married. It was in December of 94. So I've been with Jack just a little bit longer than I've been married.
Yeah. Well, man, Coatney has certainly made the rounds. Played with numerous bands all over Texas. Session player. He's a guy, am I right? You can call Pete Coatney and just say, hey, man, I got a gig. My drummer's not showing up. And he's going to show up with a drum kit he bought at a pawn shop.
He just offered 15 minutes ago. Did he? Hey, man, you got any gigs? I will be there.
That's right.
You know, he's on the road with Ingram out there, you know, getting, eating sushi backstage, riding the bus, getting massages before the gigs.
Absolutely.
But then if you call him and say, hey, man, I need somebody to play with Woody's Saturday night, if he doesn't have a gig, he'll be there.
Yeah.
We played several shows. A lot of me and Pete's shows, we played the All Good Cafe one time.
Yep.
Played the Aardvark in Fort Worth one time. That was where the punk high school kids moved Pete Coatney's kit off the drum riser, the opening band.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Sacrilege.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And you know what? And I hope I don't embarrass you here, but we came back from, we set up our gear. And they said, well, we got this high school band. They bring a lot of people, man. Don't worry, that kind of thing. So, you know, they all get in free. So we set up our gear, and it's customary for those of you bands out there who don't have a clue, listen up. The headliner sets up their stuff, and then the other band can use the drum kit if it's cool with the drummer.
Yep.
Or they can set up in front, you know, and then that's it. You just don't mess with the back line. So we'd set up our stuff. We went and got something. We came back, and Pete Coatney's drums, much to my horror, much to Pete's chagrin, are just cast off the stage over there.
Ugh.
Dude, and these punk kids are up there setting up their triple bass drums and, you know, 34 cymbals.
Oh, my gosh.
Pete goes, man, I don't mean that you can't move my drums because I'm Pete Coatney, but I'm Pete Coatney. That just said it all.
What a wonderful quote.
That is a great quote.
That's going to go on my refrigerator.
Well, Pete came up the other day because we were talking about how to dress on the podcast. And someone had emailed saying, Phil, I saw you in August playing a show. You were wearing a jeans and a jacket. And we kind of said, well, Pete was the guy who always he wears a jacket, even if it's 100 degrees. He never wears shorts. And you're right. Well, what's exactly. Kind of your theory on that?
Well,
how to dress?
I try to... put the show in show business. I mean, it's like you go back to
that's right.
James Brown and, you know, the greats of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, those guys, they didn't go on stage looking like they just walked off of the pier.
It's not about being comfortable.
No,
right?
You're at work.
If you even if you're going like the grocery store, though, should you be dressed like you could go play a show at any minute, you think?
Well, that's my credo.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to find me in jorts or a
Tevas
gimme shirt.
Yeah. Taking out some oranges.
I would like to get that funded, Pete Coatney and jorts and Tevas. How much would it take?
24
hours. 24
hours.
Make
the rounds online, I'm telling you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I tell you what, anything probably has a price.
All right.
Yeah, we talked about that guy for Nine Inch Nails, the drummer Josh Fries.
Yeah.
Who put out a solo record, and he had all sorts of packages. Have you heard about this guy?
Well, I know who you're talking about.
I'm not sure. You know, for $10, you get the signed record, but it went all the way to like $50,000, where for $50,000, you go to L.A., you live with him for like 2 weeks, go play miniature golf with the members of Tool and, you know, Mark Mothersbaugh.
Like watch Diva. Kurt Reznor's cars. I mean, just ridiculous
all
stuff.
All kinds of just fun stuff.
It's hilarious.
Play miniature golf with
it's
other guys.
Somebody, what was it, $25,000?
A guy ponied up $20,000, some kid went out there. And so Josh will write 3 songs about you, and you get to play on the album, and there's all kinds of bizarre stuff, man.
Wow. That's interesting.
It's not vinyl anymore,
so
Pete.
For $10,000, listeners,
what will you do, Kurt?
Well, I can tell you, Pete will put on jorts, Tevas, and a tank top.
And come wash your car.
Absolutely.
24 hours. Is that a fair price?
Every man has his price.
For ten grand.
Crocs.
Well, Pete is known in Texas music circles as, you know, he's kind of an authority out there. He's played with a lot of bands, had a lot of experience, really knew what he was doing. I think when I was coming up, I was a younger guy. I hadn't been around as much. Pete knew all the things, man. Just how to get through a gig without. He would just fearlessly show up and go, man, I got it. And just, you know, maybe not know one song, but, you know, just, hey, man, just kind of give me the tempo at the top of the song and I'll just follow you through. And, you know, it gave me a lot of confidence. I was like, man, I can get through gigs, you know, without having to rehearse. And Phil Pritchard and the full band has never rehearsed since. You know, I demand that anyone in the band just kind of can follow me, you know?
Yeah, rehearsal's overrated.
But the problem is you never have Coatney playing drums, so it doesn't...
I know. But Stu Wiley has grown quite adept.
That's right.
You know, as he has with your band, Kurt.
Oh, yes.
But Pete, I guess the first real gig you played with me was the day your child was born and you flew out to Lubbock. I had a gig in Lubbock, and you said, well, I can play the gig, Phil, but I've got a baby due here, so we'll have to see how that goes. And I'd never been to Pete's house or anything, so I show up to pick up Pete's drums because I'm just picking up his gear. You know, Pete Coatney doesn't drive in the car. You pick up his gear, and then he'll fly and meet you at the gig. So, you know, I didn't want Pete thinking I was just some, you know, guy off the turnip truck, you know. So I'm like, man, okay. So I go out there to pick up Pete. He is literally in that, you know, it's an awkward situation. He's in the driveway with the video camera, and the wife is getting out of the car. His lovely wife, Kimberly, with their baby. That would have been who?
That was Lily.
Lily?
Yeah, that was when filming. We just brought her home from the hospital.
Yeah. And they're having this intimate family moment. Here comes this guy who needs a drummer.
Van.
Phil, he's out there honking, just, you know, going, what's going on? Is this the right house? So I kind of wait for this thing to play out, and then Pete gives me his drums. So we go to pick him up in Lubbock. And there he is, you know, 100 degrees with the leather jacket, the glasses. And we go to the Blue Light in Lubbock. Your favorite place, right,
oh,
Pete?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Pete says, hey, man, we sit down at dinner. Now, the thing was in my band at the time was I pay everybody, and then everybody's on their own. I cover rooms and gas and pay everybody, but everyone's on their own for food. But I didn't know how things worked in the Ingram band, you know. So we get to dinner, and Pete kind of, he's looking at the menu very intently, very intently. And he says, hey, man, is this covered? Is this all cool with the meal? And I'm like, yeah, sure, of course, you know.
Thinking, of course, that the club had an arrangement with the restaurant.
Right, right. But I wanted to make it look like.
Which restaurant were you in?
We were across the street there at the...
the brewery place?
Yeah, the brewery place. Right.
Exactly.
It's been like five different things now.
Yeah.
Pete just kind of, he nods approvingly, and this deal's covered. Of course, I'm getting ready to order some butter on some dry toast, you know, and pay for it with...
Typical Pritchett meal.
And pay for it with, like, change out from under the car, out from under the seat. And Pete's just looking at the menu. The waiter comes over, what can I get you? I say, give me a club sandwich and a glass of water, you know, whatever. So what can I get you, sir? And Pete just looks up and says, how's the salmon today? I'm just thinking, no. Gosh.
So sure enough, Lubbock.
When in Rome, order the fish.
Freshly caught Lubbock salmon.
That's right. So delicious. he orders the salmon, and he gets some extra vegetables. He orders a five-course meal. What's your order for water? You get water, no ice, lemon on the side. Is that right?
There you go. Yeah, you got it. You got it.
So Pete, very particular. I go, man, this guy is a rock star. This is the way he's accustomed to living. So I don't want to trot upon him. So I picked up the tab for that. It was years later. I kind of, you know, ribbed him about it. You know, hit me up for the salmon in our first trip.
Good job, Pete.
And I've never heard the end of it.
I wish I'd heard the end of it. We have our own podcast. You know, so we can carve people up on the show.
That's awesome.
The other good thing was he got to play drums on some records that I've produced for guys around here.
Yeah.
Of course, we had the great Kyle Redd, singer songwriter, great guitar player.
Yeah.
He was recording a record at the old place above the Cadillac Bar, High Tide and the Heartland video place. And I asked Kyle, I said, hey, Pete Coatney, Jack Ingram's band is going to play on your record. And he was thrilled. He goes, man, that's great. That's great. I said, have you ever met Pete? No, I have never met him. I said, man, he said, how do I know him? I'm outside here. I said, man, he looks like he's, you know, in the Rolling Stones or something. Like, I mean, he'll have, you know, a couple of scarves on and a leather jacket, sunglasses or something. And Kyle's, I go, he's cool. He's the coolest guy out there. And so we go out to the street, and all of a sudden this old minivan pulls up. You know, Pete's a family man, right?
Absolutely.
Got some old cars. And what was that, like an old Chrysler?
Yeah, it's a 93 Town & Country.
Still have it?
Just got rid of it last fall.
Well, but so Pete, all of a sudden we hear some loud music, and here comes this minivan. Just kind of pulls up at the curves. Coatney rolls down the window, and yeah, there he is in full, looking like Ron Wood, getting ready for a night on the town. And he's like, where should I park? You know, I'll go around the, this is Kyle, hey, Pete kind of goes around the corner. And Red just sits there. I go, all right, Kyle, let's get in there and get mic'd up. And Red just sits there, his mouth just open. He goes, man, you weren't kidding about Coatney. I said, what do you mean? He goes, man, he even makes that minivan look cool.
Oh, my
yes,
gosh.
He does. We've embarrassed you enough, Pete. Pete has a lot of great stories. He's been out there with Jack. We're going to talk about a Johnny Cash record in what's on Phil's iPod today, the Great American Recordings.
Yes.
Because you guys got to play some shows with Johnny Cash.
Yes, we did. We were in Chicago in 97 at the House of Blues. We did two nights in a row with the Man in Black, and it was a highlight of my career.
Yeah,
getting
to meet Johnny Cash.
Outstanding.
We're going to talk about Pete meeting Johnny Cash, and also in our next segment here, which is sort of a catch-all segment, I want to. We talked about how I got to meet Ron Wood of the Rolling Stones. Kurt and I did a podcast about Every Picture Tells a Story, the great Rod Stewart record. Pete not only, well, I guess he didn't meet the Rolling Stones, but in, where were y'all, in Canada?
Canada, yeah, in Toronto.
We're going to go to Toronto, Canada, in Jack Ingram history, Pete Coatney history, where Jack Ingram was informed right before the show they were to play that night that they would have an opening act called the Rolling Stones.
A little British band you might have heard of.
The greatest rock and roll band in the world will be opening up your show tonight. We're going to talk about the Rolling Stones opening for Jack Ingram and the Beat Up Ford Band when we come back next.
You hurt the ones that you love the best and cover up all the truth with lies. You dare you be air in the dash with flies buzzing around your eyes. Blood on your saddle. Hey, idiot wind blowing through the flowers on your tomb. Blowing through the curtains in your room. You're an idiot, babe, and it's a wonder that you still know how to breathe.
Welcome back, everybody. Phil Pritchett here. Thanks for listening to the P2 Podcast. Email us at phil@philpritchett.com. I want to thank Mike Astley and Jay Bell and others for emailing in frequently with comments.
Jay Bell, frequent contributor.
We're gonna get to some of those guys here in a future podcast. A lot of great fan mail out there. Pete Coatney from Jack Ingram's Beat Up Ford Band is here with us today. Also played a lot of gigs with Phil Pritchett and the full band. And countless others. Countless albums. Has toured the world and elsewhere with Jack. We were talking about the Rolling Stones, and how you and Jack Ingram and the boys were up in Toronto, Canada, to play a gig. Now, this would have been, what record were y'all out promoting for Ingram?
We were promoting Limit or Dyin', our first major label release, and it was the fall of 97.
Yeah.
The record had come out in March of 97, and we were...
This was produced by Steve Earle.
Right.
That record, right.
Right. On Rising Tide.
Ken Levitan's label.
That's right.
Right.
And it was under the Universal umbrella. A lot of excitement surrounded it. We were on our first foray into Canada. And we were playing Toronto. Jack had arrived a day earlier so he could do some press and whatnot.
Sure.
And we had just...
Do you remember the name of the club you were playing up there? In Toronto?
I think it was the Wild Horse or the Horseshoe or the
Wild Horse Saloon, is that right?
Something Horse.
I feel like I've seen that on people's
schedule.
The
Something Horse Tavern.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, it's a rock and roll club. It's really cool. It's like, you know...
But just, I mean, how big's the club, though? I mean, there's a few hundred people.
It's just like probably the size... I'm trying to think of something in Texas that would...
The Aardvark?
It's a little bit bigger than the Aardvark. Have you played the Continental in Houston?
Yeah, oh yeah.
About that size.
Okay, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And
warehouse, shotgun style of room. Okay.
Very much like a lot of places that you played in the scene. And
so you got the gig. You're playing a bunch of gigs up there. So how did you guys become aware of what was kind of going to go on that night?
Well, it was the afternoon, and I was at a sidewalk cafe and had just been having lunch, and Jack walked up and said, "Hey, guess who's opening the show?"
And I said, well, heck, I don't know. It's our first time in Canada. I don't know what's going on, you know. And he said the Rolling Stones. And, you know, at that, I remember it was like a movie moment. I reached up and removed my sunglasses and said, what?
Say that again.
Yeah, and it was, you know, I mean, it was so outrageous, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, no, he said the club owner told me that, or the manager or whoever, the authority figure said, you know, we've got a situation tonight. He said the Rolling Stones are in town rehearsing for the Bridges to Babylon tour.
Right.
And he said, as they often
and they have
do.
They have a rehearsal complex in Toronto, Toronto somewhere. Didn't they at the time? I thought I remembered reading.
They've always
maybe that tour they had some sort of connection in
well,
Toronto.
Well, many times they have rehearsed in Toronto. In fact, yeah. That's, you know, Keith has an infamous run-in with the law.
That's right.
In Toronto. But they've rehearsed before many
tours. A lot of
tours.
History there for the Stones
yeah.
in Toronto.
And
Canadian authorities.
So, you know, the gentleman was telling Jack, he said, they want to play a club show here tonight, as they often do. Mm-hmm. They do that, you know, they like to play club shows before tours and try things
out. Put out a tip jar.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and,
borrow some gear.
They were, he said, I don't know what the situation will be. He said, we're going to accommodate them. He said, MTV is doing an interview with them for the MTV Music Awards. This was like September.
Now, had y'all already sound checked and set up, or was this early before
this
you even got
earlier. This is before we had set
put anything up.
Okay. We haven't loaded in or anything. So,
because Pete Cutney moves his drum kit for nobody. I don't know how
no
Charlie
course.
Watts is going to handle that.
Yeah, like I was going to use his. But
share so, had set up, so what happened? So you get to the show, you get to the room. Did they set up first?
Yeah, they when we got there, they had their crew setting up just like it was their show. I mean, They had their guys up there taking care of all their stuff. Their stuff was there. They were over at the bar doing the interview. And... there was just a skeleton crew of people that probably worked at the club just milling around.
They were in the club, the Rolling Stones?
The Stones were in the club at the bar doing an interview. Because of the whole situation, we didn't even go for a sound check that afternoon or anything.
Yeah.
We just hung out with the record company people and went to have sushi.
Yeah.
And
got went in Rome.
That's right.
You know?
But
Pete loves eating that fish, you know, in any landlocked city in the United States or Canada.
Yeah, so... you know, we have been told to expect everything and nothing at all, basically. It's like, we don't know if you guys will play. If we can get you on, fine.
We'll see. Yeah.
You know, it's like you may play
were you guys afterwards. Were you guys allowed to be in the club while the Stones were over there doing
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they took
so you're
us
just
in,
looking at them over there.
They took us in the back door. They
yeah,
said,
okay.
Yeah. So I walked in and walked right up to the stage and planted myself in front of the stage.
Yeah. And you did you videotape some of it?
I did. I did
videotape.
Yeah,
video camera. So you're sitting there. So there's no one in the bar, really.
Right.
But the Stones gear is up there.
Yeah.
The road crew. And so you're sitting there. It might be, what, like an hour or so before they even start playing?
Not even that long. I mean, just moments before.
Oh, okay.
And they had not let the teeming crowd in yet.
Were people gathering outside?
At this point, the secret was out. When we drove down the street in front of the club, you know, there were hundreds and hundreds of people out trying to get in.
Slamming there.
So we were taken in the back, in the alley. I mean, it was almost movie-like.
Surreal, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So they take us in through the back and... VIP treatment almost, and so I just walked up and waited in the front of the stage, and probably within 15 or 20 minutes of opening the door and letting the crowd in, the crush of people came in.
Everybody just comes and running through the door. Was it like a cover? Was it like a free show? Just kind of a
you know what?
Promotion
I can't,
kind of.
I don't know. I can't tell you.
You think the Stones got 100% of the door that night, Sal?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, hey, man.
No guarantee.
The club just said, hey, we'll give you a $500 guarantee, $8 ticket.
And a back end.
And the back end. But the hump was probably about $2,000. So got to pay for sound and a door guy.
Got to pay for the sound guy, all that stuff.
So Mick, they're walking out of there with probably like, you know, $1,400 or something.
On a good night.
I wonder if they sold any merch that night.
A little merch table up there, some Stones.
But the club takes 20% of the merch.
A couple Goat's Head Soup CDs up there. Just hang in, you get one of those free when you buy the new album. So Pete, so you're out in the alley. But how'd you get in front of the stage? So you're still in front of the stage when they come
out? I just planted myself in front of the stage and just, you know.
The crowd slams up around you.
Exactly.
Where was Ingrid? Were all y'all up there pretty close?
We all pretty much gathered around.
Yeah.
Now, we had picked up a new guitar player that had not ever played a show with us to this point. Right before we came into Canada, we dropped off an old guitar player in Chicago and picked up a new guitar player. And it's Alan Woolley, who spent about 6 months with us, and he's played with a couple of really great Dallas acts, Killbilly, which is a legendary
Dallas band, Deep Ellum band,
and the Cartwrights.
Yeah, that's right.
You remember the Cartwrights? Another great band. In fact, they just did a reunion show. But he played with us for about 6 months, and this was his first show. And I later told him, I said, Alan, don't expect this night.
This was his the beginning of the end for that guy in this band. Just when I started this band, we're doing shows with the Stones.
Yeah, from here, it's all downhill.
Now we're playing the Aardvark with Phil Pritchett, you know, with Kurt South opening. This is going, I'm going back to
he
my
He had
other
nowhere
job.
To go but down, the poor guy.
So you're sitting there. And all of a sudden, just ladies and gentlemen, the Rolling Stones, they just kind of come bouncing out on the stage.
I mean, the whole
entourage.
And
they play their full, they're not playing the new stuff either. Are they playing new material? Are they just sitting there playing, you know?
No, they play. They played an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 15 minutes.
Full bore. I mean, just a club just kicking ass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
The way they should be seen. It was unbelievable. I didn't know what to expect, but I was blown away.
They didn't know if they'd be sitting there just starting over songs. Hey, we're going to try this one again, you know.
Man,
sorry.
It was incredible. They had the background singers. They had the keyboard player. They had
what? Just the whole stadium show, I mean, the whole thing,
except for the brass section. And you know, I mean, other than that, it was just like a full on show.
Wow, man!
And it was loud and proud, and I mean, they were dressed to the nines and rocking and rolling, and they sounded great. They looked great. It was
It's one of those things. You did that just happen? You know, you're just
it was unbelievable.
You have to watch the tape. Do you still have the tape somewhere?
I do have, and I took some photographs that ended up being really great. I mean, I was so close and got some great shots, and obviously, along with meeting Cash and a few other instances in my career, that's a most incredible standout point. You know.
Oh, no question. So after the set, did they break down all the gear? Were they pretty polite, the road crew and the
crew was exceptionally polite. The Stones were whisked away, and
you never saw them after the show.
No, yeah. They were whisked away as soon as they left the stage.
Just in some sort of a flying saucer kind of thing, just I take did, off from the roof of the club.
The Stones
stealth bomber just airlifted out
a Ford Town and Country station wagon.
That's right, with the wood paneling on the side. Watts just got the hood up trying to get it started.
I
swore I'd never play a club gig again.
What's going on with this?
What's going on? Keith, the alternator's out.
Keith.
So they roll off. They're whisked away. So now you've got to follow the Rolling Stones. How many people have to do that?
Well, I think in the modern era, I'm trying to think.
Who would ever have played after the Rolling Stones?
Well, probably after 1965 or so, there's probably never been a band that has had them open. But you know, obviously,
you ought to put that on Ingram's website. The only band that the Rolling Stones has ever opened for, Jack Ingram and the Beat Up Boys.
That's quite a bullet point in the press kit.
And then you have the footage on there, some pictures to prove it.
Yeah,
we've had the podcast.
Yeah, we had a couple of my photos on that on his website with that information on there. But you know, of course, it was incidental, but still, it happened. You know,
it happened.
It's rock and roll history. I mean, I know it sounds.
You're right there on the front row with a video camera.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no question.
It sounds like a platitude, but it is rock and roll history to say the Rolling Stones opened up for us.
So what happened? Did the room clear out?
Well,
I mean, after the show,
need to go into that.
That must be hard. Was it really a weird night after that?
No, I tell you what, we were super pumped and jacked to be able to play.
Yeah,
I mean, it was super inspiring.
Right,
you know? But obviously, I would say 98% of the crowd was not there to see us.
Okay,
but we did have some people stay, and they were appreciative, and they enjoyed the show, and we had a great time. And you know what? I think if the whole place would have cleared out except for the staff, we still would have had just as good a show.
Oh, you've still been riding high. No,
and we
yeah.
were just knocking it down. It was incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Jack was all over the stage. It was Jumpin' Jack Flash.
There you go. Jumpin' Jack Ingram Flash. Did they play Jumpin' Jack Flash? They played all the hits that night, remember?
They did. They played a lot of the classics. They played some of the newer stuff. They played some of the stuff that I really like off of Voodoo Lounge.
I quite like that record,
actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But, they played, you know, a lot of the classics and...
Man, that is just a phenomenal story. The Rolling Stones opening for Jack Ingram in Toronto, Canada. A day that will live in Texas music history as Pete Codney has. He's told from the guy who was on the front row right here, my good friend Pete. Well, speaking of other great stories from Pete Codney and his travels in this business the last, 20 years or so, something?
Well, at least, yeah.
At least. Well, as if that wasn't enough for meeting the Rolling Stones, we alluded to it earlier. We're going to get into what's on Phil's iPod. Of course, I got tons of Johnny Cash on there. I was in college when he had his big comeback, you know, the Rick Rubin comeback. We're going to talk about that first record he made with Rick Rubin, the acoustic American Recordings album. Just a masterpiece. I mean, right there, instant masterpiece. And I think
classic
when it came out. And you guys played some shows with him in Chicago right around that time.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that because I saw that tour in Austin at the Irwin Center. And we're going to talk about Pete Codney meeting Johnny Cash and playing some shows with the Man in Black himself, Pete Codney and Kurt South, in the vault when we get back.
Delia, oh Delia, Delia all my life. If I hadn't shot poor Delia, I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. I went up to Memphis and I met Delia there. Found her in her parlor and I tied her to her chair. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Welcome back, everybody. Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Email us, phil@philpritchard.com. Or call us here at the studio. Come record. Book the band. It's what we do. 817-733-5256. With me is the great Kurt South. Thanks
Greetings.
For being here, Kurt.
Thanks for having me.
In his usual spot there on the couch, holding court. And today we have my good friend, Texas music legend, filling us in on some great stories over the years on his travels all over the country. Jack Ingram's beat-up Ford band drummer of 15 years, and so much more. The great Pete Codney is here. We just got through talking about the great story that I'd heard several times and asked to be repeated when people would play shows with me. The Rolling Stones opening for you guys in Toronto, Canada. Just a great story. Once in a lifetime deal, really. I asked Pete before he came in on the show today. I said, "Man, think of a classic album." You know, Kurt and I have recently done a St. Dominic's Preview by Van Morrison. Every Picture Tells a Story, the first Dire Straits record. What are some other records we've done recently in the P2's iPod?
We did the Neil Young record.
Russ Never Sleeps, of course.
Russ Never Sleeps. And we did Synchronicity by the Police.
Oh, my Synchronicity. Gosh. Oh, yeah. Pulled that one off.
Yeah, that's a great record. Yeah,
what else? Let's feel like, because Pete was kind of like, what have you guys been doing? I was trying to hit a few more before we get into the Johnny
Cash. Oh, we've
Cash
done stuff. Tumbleweed Connection.
Elton John.
We did Graham Parsons, his two solo albums.
Wow. Kurt told the whole story about how his body was burned out there, yeah. You know.
Hey, that's Russ Never Sleeps. That's a live record, right?
Yeah. Half great. Live, half. Remember, we're trying to determine where.
Well,
it's been
half of it sounds like it was kind of done on a sound stage with no audience.
The two versions of Hey Hey My Powderfinger.
Kind of sound check. Yeah. Board tapes almost.
It's great stuff.
We've covered some classics. We
have
covered
most,
some mostly rock
classic,
and roll
not around. A lot of new stuff. We keep kind of going back to that 1971, 72. Sticky Fingers, our friends the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, we did Sticky Fingers.
Ronnie Wood, we love him, man. Well, I asked Pete what he'd like to maybe address here, and he said, "Man, I really like this Johnny Cash American Recordings. I bought this album at Waterloo Records, man. When did that come out? Early 90s?
94.
Yeah. And Cash returned to form. I mean, just beyond a return to form. I mean, just he just went into the. It's like he went to the just the first rung of heaven almost.
He
with that
into
record.
The shoes
I mean,
of the
he, you know, he was a classic act.
Record.
He was great."
Yeah,
but you know, probably on par with I don't know a Waylon Jennings or a George Jones or something, a classic, a legend in every sense of the word. I tell you what, man, when he made that record and the one after that with the Heartbreakers, the Unchained album, that was just stratosphere stuff.
Yeah, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and so you guys, Ingram, now was this the same kind of what were y'all out doing? Same tour, or this would have been
this
earlier.
Was- Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to remember. This was 97 also. I believe it was like the spring.
Yeah.
Probably more like spring of 97.
So you get a few shows at the House of Blues in Chicago.
It was two nights.
The original site of the first House of Blues, right?
Yeah.
Chicago, first one. And so y'all go there to play, and of course, y'all must have been a little upset. You're like, look, man, you know. Now, was this after the Rolling Stones deal?
No, this is before.
Before, okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't spoiled by having the Stones open for you?
No.
You didn't think that, man, maybe Cash should go on first?
How many tickets is Cash good for in this market?
I mean, yeah. Just, man, Johnny Cash, come on, man. I mean, you know, he made this record with Steve Earle. Johnny Cash, come on. Maybe he should go on first. No debate. So you show up to open up for the great Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
How did that all go down?
Well, you know, we were excited and thrilled beyond belief because you know, the weight of his
legend.
His legend, his everything about him, his presence. I mean, the man is just...
He's one of those guys that the rock and roll guys, like Willie Nelson maybe as well, that, you know, guys can say, man, I really don't like country, but I like Johnny Cash.
Yeah. He's ubiquitous.
He is ubiquitous. We have to use that word every podcast. Well done there, Kurt.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we played the two nights with him, and his audience was very receptive and very polite.
Yeah,
you know,
playing the new material as well. I was impressed because I saw that same tour in Austin and was impressed. And it was so weird because you go see these classic acts, and you're kind of worried, like, God, they're going to play a lot from the new album because I really want to hear them play their older stuff. But I really, when I got that new Cash record, man, I knew the whole thing by heart by the time I went to the show. And I didn't know I knew his greatest hits and stuff in the Folsom Prison record and all that. But I wanted to hear him play, you know, Delia and all those great songs from there, you know,
right,
off of that record. And he did on that tour.
Did
he do the acoustic set in the middle with just him and the guitar?
He did, and he... you know, the band, even when he did this, the show with the portion of the show with the band, it was the Tennessee Three, and they were amazing. You know, the drummer had been with him for 37 years at that point, or something crazy like that.
Got that train beat down, I bet.
And left-handed drummer.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah,
Stu Wiley, great left-handed drummer.
Not the only one. You're not alone.
Yeah,
and man, the guy from Reckless Kelly.
Yeah. It was just Jay from Reckless Kelly.
Yeah, Jay from Reckless Kelly, left-handed. Man, so, Cat, did he open with Folsom Prison Blues?
You know what? I don't remember what he opened with, but I think he may have. But I tell you what, I was just blown away just watching him, his presence on stage.
And he was still really in good...
He was in good shape.
In good shape then. That was... he didn't start really getting sick till a few, several years after that.
Well, he was having the onset of whatever that...
disease, the nervous disorder and things that he had.
But he was... And you could tell he was slowed by age. I mean, I got to talk to him. And he was...
All right, hold on, back up here. We're watching Johnny Cash show, so you're backstage, and so here he comes off the stage, Johnny Cash.
Yeah, he was taking a break
while... Was he sitting there, you know, kind of fishing through the catering or something? Like, were you sheepish?
I just went up to him, I said, Mr. Cash, I just want to say how much I appreciate you, and, you know,
did
I shook his
hand.
Say,
you're the first guy that's ever said that to me.
No, he just he was very just very, very nice. Warm and inviting, and he was taking a break while I think John Carter was singing a song, and so I got to talk to him for a brief moment, and then after our second night he sent someone to come get us, and this guy said, Mr. Cash wants to see you guys, and we had just gotten off stage from our set. And
after you'd played your opening set the second night.
And so we go up to his green room, and it was interesting, you know, because you enter the portal, and it was almost like there was like this fog almost around him. It was
the Wizard of Oz,
standing in the middle of the room, and he was this huge figure, this imposing figure. And and he says, hey, you boys, I sure enjoyed it, you know, in his inimitable style.
Yeah. There he is.
And
freaking
so
Cash,
we got
man.
A picture with him, and he was just very gracious and inviting and warm. And it was just great to have that experience. I mean, there's a handful of things that have happened in this business that I could say, if I quit tomorrow, it has been...
You could still carry with you for a long time.
A life's worth of memories.
Well, we're trying, when you're coming on the show, I really wanted to touch on some of these things that you've gotten to do. I said, man, you know, we've only got an hour here with you. We hope you come back many times on the podcast. I knew Pete had a lot of experience. What is there anything that would even really compare to the meeting Johnny Cash or you know, playing a show with the Rolling Stones? I mean, is there, besides those two, is there a bit of a drop off before the next? Well, I'm just saying. I mean, is there anything else? We came upon those two things.
The only thing that I can think is you know, playing a show with Phil Pritchett and the full band.
That's,
I mean,
right. Oh man, we're a tough act to follow.
You know, right? And yeah, it's just a shame that I don't get to do more of it. But
I know.
You know, I just didn't make the cut. Really, I played a handful of shows.
I know, man, you stuck with this Ingram guy.
Wait till I hire you for a gig.
Oh yeah,
he's got some. South's got work, man. He's got stuff he's got to go play. He needs a drummer, and he is hiring. And Cotney, as we said, man, you can give him a call, and he'll come play your gig.
For the right price.
Play on your record. Every man has his
I'm playing
price.
With Sonny Shasta Sweeney this weekend.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun out there playing some shows.
She's good.
So what strikes you about the Cash record itself, the American Recordings?
Well, I tell you what. I listened to it again at least twice last night, and this morning I listened to it. And some of it just brings me to tears. It's an album of... I wrote on my you know, this is awful, this is technology, but the Facebook thing, you know, got on there. I said everyone needs to revisit this record. It's like the missing Psalms or Ecclesiastes.
That's right.
Said this album is so,
that's well put right there,
stark and lonely and painful, and it's a piece of worship. It's a worship experience.
It really is.
I mean, you know, he goes through the angst of existence and sin and redemption. I mean, the gospel is definitely communicated in that record.
We talk a lot on the show about there's some, you know, obvious disenchantment maybe with a lot of music today, even in Texas music. We talked on the podcast. There'd been some talk on a Galleywinter Texas music website, and the guy was just saying that, you know, he felt like a lot of these new bands didn't really have the things that maybe some of these, you know, early guys, maybe like Jack or you know, Keen or something, kind of, you know, they were out there trying to be Texas and be their own kind of. He says he gets hit with a lot of marketing campaigns up front, you know, some of these younger guys, you know, he's got a single and 50 t-shirts and the record comes out next year kind of deal. And it there seems to be such an emphasis on everything from Cribs on MTV or whatever, that all performers want you to think that they're just living the good life, man, that nothing is wrong. And really, if they took a good look at the guys like Cash, the guys like Bob Dylan, you know, what they're really writing about is when things aren't right. Like you're talking about the sin and redemption thing. And that's what just makes these guys loom larger than life, is really a willingness to open that part of themselves up and not... You just talk about the good life all the time. They're talking about the hard life.
Yeah, and you know the
thing, and he does that on this record.
What grabs me about his performance is that not only does he deliver the stuff that he writes with urgency, but the stuff that someone else has written,
what he brings to it,
he delivers it sometimes with more passion and urgency. I mean, that song 13 that Glenn Danzig wrote.
Yeah, yeah,
and you can even fast forward to his last record before he died, Hurt, you know.
I was like, he's doing a Nine Inch Nails.
It reduces what those guys have done performance-wise.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Because once he does it, he interprets it in such a way that it's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. It's like the voice of God, you know.
It is very prophetic.
Yeah, I mean, he could read the phone book or something, and it would just have a weight to it because of who he is, what he's lived, and what he's been able to... you know, contribute to culture at large, you know.
The songs that stick out to me the most off that record are Delia.
Yeah.
13, of course. And then I love the song Redemption and...
Down by the train,
the Tom Waits song.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to take a Tom Waits song and do it.
I saw Judas Iscariot carrying John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah.
But the way he says that line, sings it, is just... God, it is chilling, man. Really chilling.
Yeah, to be able to take a Tom Waits song and reinterpret it as hard-hitting as that, that's pretty impressive, because Tom Waits is another one of those voices that's pretty, you know, everyone knows it's Tom Waits.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I also love, I'm sitting here looking at the list of songs, Drive On.
Yeah.
Did he write that one? That was one of his, wasn't it?
Yeah. He did write that one.
Oh, that is chilling, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I got a friend named Whiskey Sam. He was my boonie rat buddy for a year and now. He said, I think my country got a little off track. Took him 25 years to welcome me back. But it's better than not coming back at all. Many a good man I saw fall. And even now, every time I dream, I hear the men and the monkeys in the jungle scream. Drive on. It don't mean nothing. My children love me, but they don't understand. And I got a woman who knows her man. Drive on. It don't mean nothing. It don't mean nothing. Drive on. Well, I remember one night, Tex and me, rappled in on a hot LZ. We had our 16s on rock and roll, and with all of that fire, I was scared and cold. I was crazy, and I was wild, and I have seen the tiger smile. I spit in a bamboo viper's face, and I'd be dead, but by God's grace, drive on. It don't mean nothing. My children love me, but they don't understand.
Oh, man. American Recordings.
And that song finds new relevance now.
Oh, it does.
You know, think of some of the soldiers.
I can't talk about the hit he got.
You know, I mean, and we just went to Guantanamo Bay and played for the soldiers over there, and hearing some of their stories and some of the experiences that they're having to go through.
Timeless deal.
When I listened to that song last night, I was thinking, man, this song is relevant for soldiers now.
That's right.
You can take Vietnam out of it. Right. You know.
Well, Johnny Catman, you know, we always talk about songwriting here on the show, Kurt and I and whoever's in here with us. And it's one of those things that's hard to put your finger on it, but something very at the heart of all these guys is just that willingness to hold up the mirror, you know, to the realities of the world and also to themselves and their own frailties, you know. Big in life as Johnny Cash is, you know, and everything. His willingness to seek forgiveness and all those great themes, you know, that are, you know, just biblical in nature, you know, or just, you know, the battle between right and wrong on earth, you know, is just incarnate in what these guys write, you know, Dylan the same way.
A transparency.
Yeah, that's right.
Willingness to expose themselves.
Yeah, and it's just there's just no front to it, you know.
There's no BS at all, and that's the appeal.
And so much music today, Texas or whatever, I think where guys are selling themselves short or just say, hey man, people want to hear. They just want to party, man, have a good time. So we're gonna write some songs about, you know, just hitting the lake and, you know, having some beers and stuff, and that's all great. We all love doing that too. But in order to, you know, transcend time, you know, and have a chance at least of achieving that, and what songwriter would aspire to anything less than what those guys have done. So I'm always a little taken aback when I see someone having too good a time with their music sometimes, because I'm like, you know, he doesn't even know what he's supposed to be doing. He thinks he's supposed to be up here, you know, thumping his chest and patting himself on the back and doing cartwheels. And I'm just kind of like, you know, if he would really open, you know, what he needs to be doing, you know, if he does aspire to these guys he talks about admiring, is you know, need to take a step back.
Well, I think that the stuff that's meditative and reflective has more of an appeal. I know for me, particularly, right. And stuff that brings me to think about the important things and maybe the things of heaven as well as the things of earth.
That's right.
You know, like, I read a quote recently that Bono said, all music for me is an act of worship.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
the voice of the spirit, music is the voice of the spirit. You know, you hear said a lot.
I'll never forget you and Roger Ray and I were talking in somewhere around here one night.
Yeah.
And
Roger Ray from Jason Boland's band, we all know.
Yeah, and I'd only put out my first album. Roger is a friend of mine and very blunt, very honest. He goes, South, your record is okay. But you need to mine something a little deeper.
Yeah.
And I was telling you and Roger, you and I didn't know each other that well at the time. Mm-hmm. I was telling you about some pretty dark periods of my life. And
That's right. I remember
that's
that.
That's the stuff you need to dig up. And within, it was a very short period of time, I wrote some songs that still to this day,
yes,
I stand up by. Man, if you,
your best songs, yeah.
If you want to know what I've done, these songs, and I wrote a, after talking to you guys about that, I started thinking they're right. You know, I need to mine a little truth.
Yeah. I remember that. I remember saying to you, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. And Roger was there. Kind of like, man, you're telling these, you know, stories about your struggles and stuff. And I remember thinking and saying maybe like, well, man, where is it in the songs?
Yeah.
Man, where is it in the songs? You know. And that was early on. You know, we were kind of getting going, and you were starting to make records and things like that. And
y'all turned me into a sad, sad man after
that's
that.
That's right. All the Time in the World, Boulevard, some great Kurt South songs that make the rounds routinely. Many songwriters are here in the Metroplex and elsewhere.
That's all part of maturing and growing as a songwriter, too.
It is.
You start writing what you think is expected and what you think will be what people want to hear, and you start writing the stuff that you want to play.
Yeah, exactly.
And that you want to express.
That's right. Songwriting talk here. Johnny Cash. We can't thank Kurt South enough for being here on the podcast as he is, and our special guest today. Thanks so much to the great Pete Coatney for being here. I tell you what, man, sometimes I tell guys come in the studio, I'm like, hey, maybe we can get Pete to play on your records or something, man. They always light up a little bit.
They melt.
Yeah, they do. They go, man, really? Would he play on my album?
And I'll bring good coffee.
That's right. He'll bring good coffee. And I say, as the great Spencer Starnes, producer in Austin, Sleep at the Wheel and a lot of other bands down there, Junior Brown, he just said, hey, man, he's a musician. I said, what do you mean? He said, if you pay him, he's going to show up. And I have lived my life according to that credo. It's never let me down. But Pete Coatney, not cheap, though.
No.
He has his price, but it's up there, and deservedly so. You know, guys who travel the world and have the Rolling Stones open for him, they don't come cheap to play.
You can't offer him $75 in free draft beer.
Absolutely not. He's already got that.
He doesn't take checks either.
Johnny Cash. It's the big one with the two dogs on it. Are they dogs? And he's holding the guitar case. Cash.
Yep.
Rick Rubin, just a brilliant producer. Some say his brilliance is just letting the act do something. It just brings it out of him. That whole record was him in like Cash's house or Ruben's house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just like we're sitting here doing the podcast. A microphone, guitar, that's it. Maybe one mic, you know, playing in the one mic with the vocal and guitar.
A black Martin guitar that was the first black guitar that Martin had made.
Is that right?
In 1969. Yes. They made it for him, gave it to him. It was the first black guitar they had ever made.
Is that right?
Yeah. I didn't know. And it was his favorite, and that was the one he used on that record.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Wow. Coatney's fully. We'll have to have Pete Coatney back for many podcasts.
Pete just lives the rock and roll dream.
He lives
dream,
the rock
man.
And roll dream, dude. Stones, Johnny Cash. Well, thanks for being here, Peter. Email us here, phil@philpritchard.com. Call us at the studio. Record. Book the band. 817-733-5256. Go see Jack Ingram and the Beat Up Ford Band. They're traveling all the time, all over the United States. Go see Kurt South. He plays everywhere as well, especially on Sundays, man, at the Hangover, Hipster Hangover Party, man, at Fred's. Outstanding classic venue here in Fort Worth.
Come to this studio. Phil, you've done a great job here.
Come to the studio. Thank you, Pete.
Beautiful.
Yeah, man, Trinidad. We got some more cool rugs in here, instrument. Of course, all of Pete Coatney's drums are here at Trinidad World Recording.
At least one quarter of them.
We're going to cut a record as soon as the podcast is done.
Absolutely. Go pick up that Cash record on iTunes. Download every Phil Pritchett song on iTunes, every Jack Ingram song on iTunes, and every Kurt South song on iTunes. Be good out there, folks. My thanks to Kurt South and Pete Coatney. We will see you next week on the P2 Podcast. Take care.
Once it rained 40 days and it rained 40 nights. And he cried and he cried and he cried and he cried. On the 41st day, he passed away. He just dehydrated and died. He went up to heaven, located his dog. After that, he rejoined his arm. Below all the critics, they took it all back. Cancer robbed the whore of her charm. His ex-wife died of stretch marks. His ex-employer went broke. The theologians were finally found out. right down to the ground. The jailhouse burnt down, and the earth suffered perpetual drought. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.